This is New Orleans Jazz by Don Richardson. It is the rare time we're going to play a ragtime song on the 1917 podcast.
I have a feeling that most ragtime views on YouTube are us.
People can't see this at home, but this is being played by a computer program. So there's sheet music on the left. Mm-hmm. Or there's a picture of like the cover sheet music on one side, and the other side is the actual sheet music. And there's a computer that is playing the song. So what you're hearing is the computer take on this.
Yeah.
So there is no soul in this. This is truly the player piano version. But I feel like even the player piano version has more soul than that. That I think is capturing a performance. Mm-hmm. I think someone actually plays a piano and then they capture that performance. I think that's how player pianos work.
I'm not sure.
You don't really know. No, I don't know.
No.
There was my friend who was writing the book about player pianos, who I kept goading him about and kept hating me for it. Mm-hmm. And he had to move away to Germany. But he would have known the answer.
We get in touch with him. Do you have his number? Let's call him.
He's in Germany.
What time is it in Germany right now?
It's like 7 hours different. It's too late at night to know if it's earlier or later.
So it's about 5 a.m. in Germany.
Or 5 p.m.
It's 5 a.m. Like, yeah. You know, does he have a job where he has to get up early? Is he like a German farmer?
A German farmer?
Yeah.
He's like growing Germans? We used to grow radishes, but we decided to grow Germans this year. We got a good crop of Berliners coming in. And some Munich residents over here. These guys are for hamburger. Our sponsor this week on the 19th... Oh, welcome to the 1917 podcast.
So important, yes.
Yeah. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan, and with me, as always, is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy, hoy, Jeff.
Ahoy, hoy. Our sponsor this week is Kudahy's Fluid Beef.
It's the other brand.
Yes. I didn't want to give short shrift to all the other different types of fluid beef out there. At breakfast, a strengthener. At luncheon, a comfort. At dinner, a necessity. Containing the elements of prime, raw beef. Entirely free from that smoky and cooked taste so prominent in every other brand. Useful for improving the flavor of soups, roast meats, stews, gravies, etc. Sold by grocers.
I would gladly watch a 10-hour documentary about the food beef wars.
They say entirely free from the smoky and cooked taste. Mm-hmm. Cooked beef does not sound like the worst idea in the world for a flavor. They're advertising it tastes like raw beef. And smoky is not a bad thing either.
No.
Wait, useful for improving the flavors of soups, roast meats, stews, gravies.
So it's improving the taste of meat? Like throw
meat sauce on meat in order to make it taste meatier.
Mm-hmm.
So they're advertising it's like A1 steak sauce.
Yeah.
I've heard it's basically like, if you know what like Vegemite or Marmite is like, mm-hmm. it's that consistency, except it smells like rotted beef, and you can put it on toast.
All right, we have to try it. I mean, when we talk about it this much, it deserves to be tried.
Yeah, I'm hungry. I don't know if you're hungry. I could go for some fluid beef.
We could just, like, can we just blend, like, you know, blend the porterhouse or something? Is it?
like the 1970s Saturday Night Live Bass-O-Matic?
Yeah, we're just going to blender and, you know, throw some chuck in there.
But then I think you just have like a beef slurry, and liquid or fluid beef is different than that. I don't know how it's different, but it's different. You know what I was trying to get on this show though? Sarsaparilla.
Yeah.
I wanted us to have a real old sarsaparilla.
We like a little sass in our prilla.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the only place I can find selling sarsaparilla sells it in like a 12-pack, and it's $3 a bottle. But then I found the individual bottles for $3. So like, okay, fine. But then it was like $20 shipping for a $3 bottle. I was like, no, no.
Can we buy it locally, but we'll go get it?
Yes. There is a place in Montclair, because, of course, Montclair is the like craft beer center of the mm-hmm. world. But they even have craft sodas. They sell sarsaparilla there.
Well, that's like one town over. Why aren't we? Yeah. Let's go get one.
I was thinking that we could spend an entire episode just downing sarsaparillas.
Check online. Are they open now? Let's go get one.
Yeah, they're open.
Hold on. What's the name? What place is it?
It's Bear Burger.
Oh, I know Bear Burger.
Yeah.
If they are, we'll take a break.
And go get some sarsaparillas?
Yeah, and then come back and we'll have them. Let's see.
I'm sure they're open. It's not even 10 o'clock. They're probably open until 11.
It's midweek.
Hmm. But they're next to the movie theater.
They close at 10.
They close at...
It's 9:55 right now.
Oh, and I'm more than 6 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can taste you, sweet, sweet sarsaparilla, who I don't really know what you taste like. I'm assuming it's birch beer.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's birch beer, but I'm not sure.
All right, next show, we're next going show. To have fluid beef and sarsaparilla.
And vichyssoise.
Well, it'll be November. Uh-huh. There'll be our Thanksgiving episode.
Okay.
Did they have Thanksgiving in 1917?
They had Thanksgiving in 1620. So I'm assuming they had it in 1917. Going on this week, 100 years ago today, Brazil goes to war. They, like the rest of the world, are sending big ships across the Atlantic, and a German U-boat decided to sink a Brazilian ship. I don't know if the Germans knew it was a Brazilian ship. I don't know exactly how you would know, unless you go up on the very back and see like what flag is painted on the back there, and then look up in your book of flags and say, oh, yep, that's the Brazilian flag. I guess mm-hmm. we shouldn't shoot this one. I think they were shooting first, and then as the ship sunk, like, well,
let's go take a closer look.
Yeah, now we've got plenty of time before it gets too submerged to find out what this was. But that made Brazil go to war with Germany, ultimately. And here's a fun trivia. Brazil has never lost a war.
How many have they been in?
They haven't been in that many wars, which is one of the reasons why they're a very prosperous country.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never struck out in the major leagues.
that's true. Yeah. But they were in World War I fighting the Germans. They were in World War II. And is that it? Have they only been in two wars? Does killing your own people in the Amazon count as a war?
I don't know. What about, like, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu?
Oh. So like, Wesley Snipes and Michael Dudikoff count as warriors?
Is Wesley Snipes the most famous Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy that you know? Like,
he's pretty famous.
What about the Gracie family?
Who are the Gracie family?
They are the fathers of Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
And their name is Gracie?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like
Brazilian. Name. It's not like Gracie Allen.
Oh.
Yeah, so there was a Hoist Gracie. Here's the big one.
Okay. I had a job like 15 years ago where I was reporting on interesting things for each of the counties of New Jersey. And my editor at the time said, write up a piece about a Brazilian jiu-jitsu in Morris County. And I spent like half a day calling every single martial arts place in Morris County, and none of them did Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
It's everywhere now.
Yeah, it's everywhere now, but at the time, it was at the very beginning of the trend, so early that it wasn't actually a trend in the limited area that I was calling about. So I called back the editor and said, there's no Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I've checked everywhere. And she said, well, just find something else. Which was the problem, because it would take like 3 days to come up with an idea to write a 200-word article about, like, a light, fluffy trend, and then I'd get, like, $40 for it. It's like, this is a whole lot of time.
Terrible job.
Yeah.
Well, what paper was this for?
It was a lifestyle magazine. I don't even know if it's still around.
It's not anymore. I don't even check. I know it's not.
Yeah, but there are a lot of these lifestyle magazines. They just get sent around. People flip through them. There's pictures of desks. I'm thinking of desks because the art director of the magazine illustrated an article about desks with a picture of a room with no desks. And I was working as a copy editor there, and the caption was like, look at this beautiful desk, and there's no desk in the picture. And I wasn't quite sure how to say it. Like, there's no desk in this illustration of a desk. And they wrote back like, well, we're still going to run this, because we feel like this picture illustrates the concept of a beautiful room with a desk in it.
Maybe this picture was drawn on a desk, and that counts.
The art director was also the daughter of the owner of the company.
So oh, she I had remember carte this. Blanche. Yeah, yeah. I kind of remember this now.
Our big story this week has nothing to do with desks or the absence of desks. But I guess it kind of does, because desks are what animators use to draw on. And 100 years ago today, Felix the Cat was first birthed into the world.
Mm-hmm. That's a character, like, I know who he is,
uh-huh.
but I don't know how the hell I know who he is. Because I've obviously never seen a Felix the Cat cartoon. I don't know anything about him. I couldn't tell you anything about him. I don't know what his voice sounds like. I'm guessing it's kind of like this kind of voice.
Well,
but how do I know him?
You know him because he was the first giant cartoon star. You could say it was like Gertie the Dinosaur, but she was from like 1908 or
That I've seen. Gertie. She eats trees.
Right.
I've seen the clown that pops out of the inkwell, too.
Out of the inkwell.
Right. I've never actually seen a Felix the Cat.
Yeah. Felix the Cat started way in like 10 years before sound was around. And that's one reason why you don't know what Felix sounds like. Because I'm sure there are some cartoons where they gave him a voice, but it was like 15 years after he first started. So it wasn't his real voice because he didn't have a voice. He was made to be a silent character.
Well, Mickey was a silent character originally.
He was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they gave him a voice.
Mm-hmm.
But no one saw the first two cartoons they made of Mickey. But
look at you, Mickey expert over there.
But Felix became very popular starting in 1919, which is officially when his first cartoon came out. But we are talking about him in 1917 because of a controversy, or a controversy, as they would say. No, that's not how they would say
it. I never heard anybody say that.
No. In England, they say controversy instead of controversy. And the controversy is this. The guy who invented Felix the Cat in 1919 is an animator named Otto Mesmer. He created and drew Felix the Cat. But he didn't own the character. The guy who owned him was an animation distributor named Pat Sullivan. Pat Sullivan was Australian. And I'm assuming Australians would say controversy the way the English do. They mm-hmm. would say controversy. And Pat Sullivan wanted to claim that he had invented the character, even though this other guy had actually drawn and did everything with Felix.
The way these old characters look, I almost think nobody should be allowed to take credit.
Yeah.
Because there's not much to the designs.
Right.
Like, hey, what I didn't know I did? I drew a cat. I drew a cat, and that's about it. There's nothing really specific about this cat.
Yeah, so Pat Sullivan's claim to fame was that he had drawn the cat 2 years earlier, 1917, because there was some Australian drawing of a cat that someone had found. No copies of this exist, but there are a lot of Australians who believe that Felix the Cat is an Australian-made character, made by an Australian and an Australian himself.
He's like the pride of Australia.
Yes, yes, and everyone else in the world is like, no, he's not Australian.
Have you ever been to Australia?
No, I'd love to go.
Yeah, me too. I'm wondering if, like, as soon as you land in Sydney, there's just, like, Felix the Cat stuff all over the airport.
Not all over the airport, but there was a comic book artist named Todd McFarlane. He got very popular in the 80s and 90s. And one of his things, just like
Al Hirschberg. He was Spawn, right?
Yeah, he did Spawn.
Yeah.
Just like Al Hirschberg put Nina in all of his drawings. Mm-hmm. Todd McFarlane would put a little Felix the Cat in somewhere in each of his comics. And I started to look for them, and I found them for a little while, and it was really fun, especially in rereading. But then I stopped, because they were so small. It wasn't like the size of a dime on the comic book. It was like the size of, if you can imagine, if FDR had like glasses on the dime, it would be like the size of the glasses on FDR on the dime.
Oh, so it's not even really that much fun.
No. No, and it would always be like in a huge pile of garbage that Spider-Man is swinging next to. Like, I don't want to look at... There's 22 pages of garbage, and I don't want to look at all of them just to find a little thing that might be Felix the Cat. Because all you see are things that are almost Felix
the Cat. Was it in every single panel?
No, that was the thing. It was only in one panel in the 22 pages, and sometimes it was on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a fun game for him to play, to add the Felix the Cats. And it was a fun thing to occasionally find one, but it wasn't fun to do it month to month. And at a certain point, he stopped. And I don't think he told anyone.
So they're just going crazy looking for it.
Yeah, looking for him over and over again. Did you know that Charles Lindbergh took a Felix the Cat doll with him in 1927 when he flew across the Atlantic Ocean?
Of course I knew that.
Oh, wow.
No, I didn't really.
Oh, okay. No. In the movie of the Charles Lindbergh story, Spirit of St. Louis, they didn't want to have a Felix the Cat doll. I don't know if they just didn't want to pay for the rights, or they felt like it would be too silly to have the entire movie be James Stewart talking to Felix the Cat doll.
Well, it could be they were thought like Harvey, some kind of idea.
Yeah, we're trying to make this guy not look totally nuts, and he's talking to a stuffed cat for 2 hours. But they decided that there was going to be a fly trapped in the cockpit, so he would talk to the fly instead, and that was their compromise.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I wonder now, between Harvey and Spirit of St. Louis with the fly, how many movies are there where Jimmy Stewart talks to animals that aren't there? If there's three, it's a trend.
Mm-hmm.
So far, we only have two.
There's going to be one in there somewhere, right? What about Mr. Smith Goes to Washington? Does he do anything like that there?
What about the poem? What about the poem?
Oh, that's right. His dog's dead.
Yes. Is he talking to his dog?
Yeah. Right. He does. I think he does refer in the second person. You are the dog.
This is his thing.
Yeah, so Bo counts.
Okay. All right.
The man did nothing but talk to...
Dead animals
and imaginary animals.
I found out that Felix the Cat is a very, very brief mention in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. In one of the... In, like, over a tunnel, there's a picture of Felix's face... Like the comedy and tragedy masks, mm-hmm. or Felix.
But he doesn't actually appear in Roger Rabbit.
No, he doesn't. But he was going to. There was a whole scene that was storyboarded and written, but was cut because they couldn't get the rights to the characters, and also because
who's holding on to the field? Like what bigger project do they have in mind for Felix the Cat?
I think it was a money thing. I think they heard that Steven Spielberg and Disney had all this money, and they got all the Looney Tunes on board. So if they spend a huge amount of money for Looney Tunes, which is like, you know, 50 great characters, you can spend at least that much money for Felix the Cat.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, no. No, just give us Felix the Cat, and he'll be honored to be here with everyone else. And they held off, and it didn't happen. And they were also really under the gun, Like, years beforehand, they had called their shot by saying the movie was going to be out this week in June and whatever year it came out in. And so they couldn't move it back 6 months, so the animators were really going crazy trying to get everything drawn. And this was the first time anyone had tried rotoscoping like this. Nowadays, it's common to have fake people and fake green screens, but it was insanely tough back then. So if they were able to cut an entire 5-minute animated sequence out, it was just, you know, it was just better for them.
Mm-hmm. Now you're the Mickey expert.
Yeah, the, right. Well, animation
you're, expert. Well, you're the Mario, expert, and now you're Mickey. Why did Mickey become so much bigger than Felix the Cat? Well, he predated it.
Uh-huh.
He was first. What made Mickey, you know, they kind of look alike.
Yes, he was a replacement because Universal, which distributed Felix the Cat, lost the rights. And so they were looking for another animated character, and that's where Disney waltzed in and said, we can do whoever you want,
mm-hmm.
just so long as it's not so obviously a cat. So we'll do something else. So that's the deal. It was like the guy who replaced Babe Ruth. Mm-hmm. I don't know who the guy is who replaced Babe Ruth, but the Yankees kept going, even though Ruth wasn't there
anymore. And where did Felix the Cat go?
He was owned by different people over the years.
And they did nothing with him, though.
They did do some stuff, but it's not remembered.
Has anybody tried, like, a relaunch of Felix the Cat?
Yeah, I always got Fritz the Cat mixed up
with Felix the Cat. No, that's what's his name?
That's the...
Crumb, right?
Was it Crumb or was it the weird animator guy whose name Ralph Bakshi? Oh,
Crumb did the comic book.
Oh, and Ralph Bakshi
did so we're both right.
Yeah, we're both right.
Yeah.
Yay, high five. Do you want to know what the cut scene from Roger Rabbit was? Because I want to tell you all about it.
Sure.
Okay. It's a funeral scene for the guy who dies at the beginning of the movie, named Marvin Acme. And they actually show you his funeral during the day.
Played by Stubby K.
Yes, who is Stubby K?
He was Marvin Acme.
Okay. His name sounds familiar. He sounds like an old comedian.
He was.
He was.
He's an old comedian.
Okay. So the six pallbearers for Marvin Acme were Bluto, Elmer Fudd, Herman the Mouse, Felix the Cat, Goofy, and Popeye the Sailor.
Who's Herman the Mouse?
I don't know who Herman the Mouse is. But the way they were positioned, the smallest people are in the front and the biggest people are in the back. So the coffin is just like jostling all over the place. And they make a joke about being a pallbearer. And then Popeye says, "Pallbearer, I thought we were an Acme bearer." Mm-hmm. And then someone else gets offended that Popeye is joking at a funeral, and they all start getting into a fight. The only person left holding the coffin is Yosemite Sam. Mm-hmm. And Yosemite Sam is just like, "God, darn it!" Just throws the coffin. And it happens to land in the dug bed, and it just goes... Then Foghorn Leghorn shows up to give the eulogy. And you get some classic Foghorn Leghorn lines. Because he never showed up. I always missed him. He didn't get any sort of role.
No, huh?
Nope.
He might be my favorite Looney Tune.
Yeah. And then they bring in more characters. The Harvey cast shows in. And Casper the Friendly Ghost rises up from the ground and says, "Do you want to be my friend?" And like all of the characters... cartoon and human alike say, "Ah, good, 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 good ghost," and they all run away.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the characters are the old black and white cartoons, like the old timers that Marvin Acme would have known, not the new color guys.
Okay, so it'd be this way. Feel is that Betty Boop?
Yeah, Betty Boop. I think would be there. Probably like Farmer Alfalfa.
Colonel, well, the one, that's one where they would turn on the faucet.
Mm-hmm.
And mice would come out.
Yeah.
I've always seen that shot. Like, the farmer runs up, like, there's mice everywhere. And he turns the faucet on.
Well, there's three different taps. There's H for hot, there's C for cold, and there's M for mice.
Yeah, then mice would pour out of the fountain. Like, yeah. I don't know anything about those cartoons beyond I've seen that shot a million times.
The scene ends where Bob Hoskins' character is walking away from the funeral, and a convertible pulls up with four people in it. And it's Bugs Bunny, it's Mickey Mouse, and it's also the drawn versions of Clark Gable and Humphrey Bogart.
Okay.
So, and they all have golf bags. So they've all gone to the funeral, but then they're going to go golfing afterwards. It's very cute.
Where did you hear about this? Did you write this? Is this fan fiction?
No, this isn't fan fiction. I found a blog post online.
Because I'll tell you right now, if you told me I've been writing Roger Rabbit fan fiction for years...
You would believe me?
I mean, well, yeah, I'd believe it, but also be very disturbed. I think I would actually try to get your children taken away from you.
That's not my fan fiction at all. You'll never know my real fan fiction.
Be honest, have you ever written fan fiction of any kind?
No. I mean, when I was much younger, I would write stories about characters, but it wasn't like I'm going to publish this. It was before the internet was around.
Mm-hmm.
The internet really...
Had the internet been around, would you have put them online?
No, because I wanted Marvel Comics to make my comic dreams come true. But I didn't understand, like, the very basics. Like, a story would say, like, part 1 of 5 in September, and then October, part 2 of 5 would come out. And I would write part 5 of 5, because I'd try to figure out what it would be. And I think, well, if I send it into Marvel now, they'd be able to publish it. Yeah, I got 3 months. It's plenty of time. Without thinking, you know, they probably have writers and artists already.
Did you actually send the stuff into Marvel?
Oh, yeah, repeatedly.
Did they ever send stuff back to you, or were they just kind of like, you know, whatever, throw it in the bin?
I got a very nice...
Please don't write to us any more letters.
No, I got a rejection letter from the Thing. It had a drawing of the Thing, and I think he was like crumpling up a piece of paper.
Really?
Yeah.
How have you saved this?
I have it upstairs somewhere. Yeah. But it was what they did whenever they got unsolicited solicitations. It was their way of saying, "Sorry, we're not reading this."
And whoever sent it would probably be happy to get a drawing of the Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, a photocopied drawing of the Thing saying, "What is this garbage?" Felix the Cat shows up 3 different times in Futurama. And each one is when the the spaceship flies into the TV, mm-hmm. and they have a little old-timey cartoon beforehand. It's three different Felix the Cats in the run of Futurama. On to our birthdays. Having a birthday 100 years ago today is Joan Fontaine. She was born Joan de Beauvoir de Havilland, which is the hoitiest name I can imagine. Wow. Yeah. Her sister is Olivia de Havilland.
Yeah, she's the more famous de Havilland.
Yes, who is still around, even though Joan Fontaine was in a whole bunch of great Hitchcock movies in the 40s. She was a real leading lady back then. But she and her sister had years, or probably decades long, or it's approaching a century now, because Olivia de Havilland is like 103 and is still alive.
She's not still acting.
No, she's not still acting. But Joan Fontaine lived until, I think, like 2009 or 12 or something. She died when she was 93. They both lived a long time, and one of them is still living. They showed up for one episode of the TV show Feud, the thing between Joan Crawford and Bette Davis. And apparently one of the sisters called the other one a bad word on air. But it's a Ryan Murphy show on FX. The whole thing is just these women calling each other nasty names. So Olivia de Havilland has sued the makers of Feud.
She didn't speak that way.
No, she didn't say, "I would never call my sister a bitch." But what she said was, "No one would have heard me say that. So therefore, you have no right to suggest that I would say that."
This is a lawsuit basically by whoever's job it is to prop her up.
Yeah.
Because there's no way she even knows about this show, right?
I follow Mark Harris on Twitter, the old film scholar writer.
Oh, I thought for sure you meant Mark Harris, the guy who married Martha Ray.
No, different wow. Mark Harris. But
that's very disappointing, Jeff.
But he said, like when Olivia de Havilland dies, this letter of like suing Ryan Murphy by saying, like, "I may have said a bad thing about her, but you never heard me say it, so therefore you're impinging my honor," is going to be bought by a middle-aged gay man. And this is going to be like a bidding war of middle-aged gay men. And then he said, "And I will win that bidding war." It was something like that. That letter may go for a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Will you throw your hat in there? Will you try to get it?
As a middle-aged gay
man?
You're
not a gay man, but I can picture you enjoying that letter.
Wait, am I middle-aged?
I think so.
I've never been sure what middle-aged means. Because when you think of a middle-aged man, I immediately think of like a 58-year-old. That's what I lock in on. It doesn't matter if he's in good shape or in bad shape. Normally I think of bad shape, but you can be in good shape too. That's what middle-aged is to me. But if you think about someone's lifespan, if you live until 80 years old, which is about average, 40 is in the middle of that.
Well, maybe it's middle of adulthood.
Middle of adulthood.
So if you're starting at...
can down.
Yes, so you say you're starting at like 18, mm-hmm. you're an adult.
Then you
get 20 years in there.
Yeah, then you'd hit right to 58 or 60.
Which would be about 50 then, right? Or 55.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so yeah, that's fair. No, yeah. Not 50. Let's go with 50. 50.
Okay. So I'm not a middle.
You're not middle-aged. No, you're dumpy, but you're not middle-aged.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I will hold on to that that phrase. If I get hit by a bus tomorrow, let that be in my tombstone. Dumpy, but not middle-aged. Joan Fontaine was born in Japan. I didn't know that. That makes her technically an Asian-American actress, along with Natalie Portman.
Who's also Asian-American?
Yes, because she was born in Israel. And Asia is such an enormous expanse of land that both Japan and Israel count as Asia. Because you got to count Israel as something,
yeah.
And it doesn't count as Europe, and it obviously doesn't count as Africa. So by default, it's part of Asia. It's not the part of Asia you think of. But Olivia de Havilland and Natalie Portman are both Asian American.
Why was she born in Japan?
I don't know. I didn't look into that. I'm assuming.
Well, she's clearly not Japanese.
No. No. Yeah, I'm not sure why. But our quiz this week is on.
Tweet at Mark Harris. Find out.
Our quiz this week is on another Asian American actor. His name is Jack Su. Mm-hmm. You know him much better as a character from Barney Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, he was not born in Japan.
No.
He was not born in America either. This is fascinating. He was born on the boat going from Japan to America.
Wow.
His parents were emigrating to America.
In mid-trip.
Now, it probably took like a week and a half back then in order to get across the Pacific. So the odds of a very pregnant woman giving birth, I guess, are higher than normal. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what your birth certificate says.
It's odd timing to pick that time. Like, that's when you're going to go?
Yeah. Well, maybe they stayed in Japan until the very last moment. Then they decided, okay, time to make our new life and have a baby in America. They just didn't time it that well. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the boat just got slowed down. Like, they stopped in Yokohama, and it's like, oh, this one guy wasn't going to come, and the tides are bad, and there's a really good drink special, so we'll just stick around another 3 or 4 days. Mm-hmm. What happens to your birth certificate if you're not born in any country?
I guess wherever the ship is registered to? I don't really know this.
Yeah, but if the ship was registered to, like, Nigeria, does that mean that
he's now Nigerian?
Because John McCain was born in Panama, mm-hmm. but he was born on U.S. Army base, and his father was in the Navy, or so he was on a Navy base. So he was an American citizen who happened to be born in another country. His parents were serving there. No one ever said he was Panamanian, and I don't think he has a Panamanian birth certificate or a passport. He may be able to get one, though. The same way that if you were born overseas in, like, Scotland, I think you're eligible for a Scottish passport.
I was actually looking into doing the Italian one, but nobody kept records.
What do you need to...
They need more Italians, basically.
More Italians in Italy?
All right. So there's a wave of immigrants.
Immigrants from countries other than Italy going into Italy.
And so they want...
They want the FBI to come back, full-blooded Italians.
Exactly. Yes. So I looked into more because, like, my kids can, like, travel and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you need, like, a lot of, like, your grandparents' records. And, Italy in the, in 1920 didn't keep the best records.
Yeah, their record was, hey, get on a boat.
So it's very difficult to do. I don't think... People of my grandparents' generation who were, poor, mm-hmm. cared much for records or hospitals even.
No. There are records about my, like, great-great-grandparents coming back from Dublin, but that is because we suspect one of them was a gun runner. Mm-hmm. Because there's not much reason for someone to go from, like County Antrim to America and then back 6 times in a year. Unless they're escorting...
Doing something illegal, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If you wanted to send something, you can just send something. Mm-hmm. If you are escorting it yourself, there's a reason for that. And it's not a good reason. But back to Jack Su. He was originally named Goro Suzuki, which is a pretty badass name.
Well, let's say that's a Japanese name. Su is, I think, a Chinese name.
I guess... Su is, like, short for Suzuki in this case. But, yeah, he's one of those guys that played every different type of Asian. He became an entertainer during World War II. Where did he perform for his fellow Americans?
What, a USO show? You want a specific place?
The specific place would be the internment camp where he was.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Not our finest hour, fellow Americans. After World War II was over and he was allowed to rejoin.
What kind of jokes do you tell in the internment camp? Or was he singing there? Like,
I think he was doing some singing, some
spinning
dancing.
Spinning plates?
Keeping people's spirits up, saying, I'm sure the war will be over soon. And then the fact that we didn't do anything is going to really be a dark stain on America. So then they'll just rip that page out of the history book and never mention it for 50 years. He had a nightclub act after World War II with what future Rat Packer?
Let's see.
Now there's 5 big Rat Packers.
Probably with Joey Bishop.
Yes, with Joey Bishop. Yes, Jack Su and Joey Bishop were touring around. I think that's where he changed his name from Goro Suzuki to Jack Su. What Rodgers and Hammerstein musical about the goings-on in San Francisco's Chinatown did he star in?
The only musical I know that has Asians in it.
Mm-hmm.
Flower Drum Song.
Yes. I thought you were going to say Pacific Overtures, which mm-hmm. is a Stephen Sondheim musical.
But I don't know that one.
No, so. But you're right. Flower Drum Song. He played two different roles in it. He played one character.
Sexy Twins?
He was like an MC character in the Broadway run. When they made a movie out of it, he switched to the male lead because the original male lead dropped out. And I was reading, at the time, they were having a huge problem finding Asian actors. I guess because they were so used to doing the Charlie Chan thing where...
yeah, they just dress up a white guy.
Yeah, dress up a white guy that... they didn't even think about hiring actual Asian actors. So when they decided to actually hire Asian actors, they weren't aware of how to do it. It would be like if you wanted to, I don't know, open up like an industrial laundry and you just like wandered the street saying, hey, do you have any experience with industrial laundry? Do you? And at the end of the day, it's like, I walked up and down Main Street. No one knows how to run industrial laundry.
What I'd like to know is how you went from talking about Asians to laundry. Jeff, Mr. Progressive.
That is because I was flipping through a magazine about engineering.
I think laundry was fresh in your mind from talking about Mr. Jack Su. I'm sorry, Goro Suzuki. I'm calling him by his proper name.
What predominantly black label did Jack Su sign on to in 1965? He was a lounge singer, so he got signed on to like an African-American
Motown?
Music label. The choices are Chess Records, Motown, or Stax.
And what kind of singer was he?
He was like a lounge singer, like Joey Bishop.
Chess.
No, it was Motown. You were right the first time. Right. Yeah. Now, I don't think he's like...
The Motown sound?
No. No, he's not touring with Aretha Franklin anytime soon. But yeah, he had a record on Motown. Okay. He acted a whole lot. I'll name the show. You tell me what nationality he played.
Okay.
Okay. The John Wayne movie, The Green Berets, from 1968.
Japanese.
No, he played Vietnamese.
Huh.
And also in that is George Takei in an early role. He's in...
Takei.
I always got it mixed up. An episode of MASH.
Korean. Yeah.
The Odd Couple. He showed up in an Odd Couple episode.
Let's see. I feel like it... All right, so this is the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't even know that Koreans existed yet. So he's not Korean.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had the Korean War, but they weren't really thought of much. We're right in the midst of Vietnam. So I think that just might be a little too soon there. I'm going to go Chinese.
Chinese, correct. Yes. And that was, I included Chinese on the list because I had Vietnamese and Korean and I wanted to have three different ethnicities besides his actual Japanese. What legendary comedy troupe did Jack Su join in the 1970s?
The Groundlings.
Groundlings, good. What was his character's name from Barney Miller?
Oh, wait. I should know this. I watched Barney Miller. Why don't I know this right now?
I remember watching Barney Miller, but I don't recall Barney Miller. It was something that I knew my dad watched.
I've watched it. I see it. What's his character's name?
Nick Yamena.
Okay.
Nick Yamena. He had a job on Barney Miller that he did terribly.
Coffee. He made the coffee.
Coffee, yes. Yeah. Yes. That is something I do remember. I remember cops making jokes about terrible coffee and I forgot that was from Barney Miller. I just assumed that was like a thing that all cops did, complain about how bad the coffee was. But that was a specific Barney Miller thing that was specific to Jack Su. He died in the end of the fifth season.
Yeah.
And Barney Miller's on.
I remember they did an episode about that.
They did a tribute episode. Yeah. And it was like a flashback where they showed all the best Nick Yamena moments. And apparently, Hal Linden visited Jack Su in the hospital. It was like their last conversation he had. And Jack Su made a joke about like I shouldn't have had the coffee. So he made one last coffee joke before he died. So that was nice of him. So that was his legacy. I don't remember enough about him, but I've seen pictures. Was one of his eyes, like, swollen?
He had very baggy eyes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was...
Like, almost like Yoda.
Like Yoda?
There's a Yoda look to him.
Okay. I wasn't sure, because the one picture I had, the one picture that's up on Wikipedia, he kind of has a hunchback look. But that's just because the way they drew the Hunchback of Notre Dame in the Disney cartoon, one eye was regular and one eye was all super swollen.
Mm-hmm.
And he's giving you, like, a three-quarter profile smile. So I'm glad to know that he was not, in fact, the Hunchback.
No.
He was just someone with world-weary eyes. And that is the end of This Week in 1917. Join us next week when we jump into November. A lot of things going on in November. The October Revolution is happening in November, which you wouldn't think it would.
No.
No.
Makes no sense.
Nope. We're also going to talk about the World Series, which also happened in October, but we're going to talk about it in November because we'll have Mark Simon on, who's our ESPN baseball expert.
Yes, the actual World Series will be over.
Yes.
This is very confusing. Actually, by the time you hear this, the World Series will be over. But right now, we're recording,
mm-hmm.
and it's not.
And it's not.
Okay.
Okay. So join us next week, or possibly 2 weeks or 3 weeks from now, depending upon when you listen to it. Does that make it even more confusing?
I imagine everybody at home thought we were broadcasting live, no matter when they're listening to it. We're live on the air.
We're just spending all day hanging around this table waiting for someone to press play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can stop pressing play now. We'll see you next week. Ahoy, ahoy.
Ahoy, ahoy.